It's These Are Bad Movies. I'm Amy Bell.
And I'm Amanda Ferriante.
And this week, Amanda has given us another one of her... she's been sitting on for a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. I've always had complaints. Always.
Okay.
Had complaints.
So what are we watching?
We're going to watch the 2009 Star Trek reboot.
And I have not seen it.
You're gonna.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Threaten you with a good time.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really wanted to watch a Star Trek movie since this is just the dumbest thing ever, but when I was like 8 or 9, I went to the movies and saw a Star Trek movie, and I like lost a tooth in the middle of the movie, and it was really like gushing blood and like horrible, and I spent most of the time in the bathroom like with toilet paper shoved up in my tooth hole, and like
tooth hole,
it was awful. And I would conflate my sensory experience sometimes, so it was Star Trek's fault in my head.
Yeah Well, now that we've addressed the elephant around Star Trek.
I have huge issues with their tooth feelings I have.
Yeah, I think we've hit the heaviest topic we're going to.
Yeah. So anyway, I will get over my weird aversion to Star Trek movies for you, Amanda.
Wow.
And watch this movie.
I feel so special. Well, let's do it then.
Let's do it. All right. We're back. We watched it. That movie, I was not prepared. I was not prepared for what bad was in a movie. I feel like I'm an expert on bad movies.
It did really well in the box office.
How?
It was a big action film on a franchise that people hadn't had like a movie in a while.
That was upsetting.
It was.
And I was upset, but Amanda made me pause the movie so she could journal about it about 45 minutes in. She's like, I just can't right now.
I needed to write some things down so I could excise them, but still retain them in some way for when we discussed it later. I'm shaking right now.
I know. She was like having so much trouble watching this movie that we took a couple of like, all right, I'm gonna process this to myself for a minute and then we can come back.
Yeah, it was needed.
And I was not prepared for it to be just like, this movie was bad in the way where like it seemed like almost every choice they could make, they didn't, like, maybe they flipped a coin, but it was that thing where the statistical anomaly happens and they failed the flip every single time. Like, it was bad choice after bad choice after bad choice. And, like, the number of just straight up cliches in it, like, the gun slides way across the room.
Yeah.
Like, have gotten better since the old days of 2009.
Yeah. So I'll say briefly before we get into the plot.
Okay.
That the movie was always bad.
Yeah.
It's just that audiences, and particularly audiences that came to the movie with prior knowledge of Star Trek, didn't really feel it until the follow-up film when they went, hey, wait a minute, this sucks actually.
Now I feel like we need to pause so I can go watch the follow-up film.
I am prepared to address it without needing to see it. I saw it once. That was enough. We don't have to.
But I'm not getting the full show. Like, Amanda was, like, going into distress. The movie was so bad.
It's bad as a film, and then it's so much worse as a piece of Star Trek film.
Yeah. And all that combined together. But for me, it just hit that point of, like, so much suck input at once that it just gets slap happy. So I was just giggling hysterically at the thing.
Yeah.
Through a lot of the movie, because it was like,
this
must be satire.
Star Trek Into Darkness is more of the same, only grittier. And Benedict Cumberbatch is in it.
You should have led with that, and we should have just watched that movie.
We're doing the episode now.
You robbed me of at least having the Benedict Cumberbatch in the movie.
That's one of the biggest problems in the movie.
That would have been the only redeeming thing in the movie.
It is the highest mark against it.
This is not working out.
So we need to do the plot for this one, though.
Okay.
Because it was bad enough before they did the sequel.
Okay, so, like, it's back in time in the space future, but it's back in time for the rest of the time that you're going to have, but it's also...
They start...
Not in the future of the future. It's in the past of the present future, but not the future. Because they really thought a lot about timeline in this and time travel. Well,
the way you summed it up is even missing an alternate timeline, actually.
Like, yeah.
You're missing a couple of steps in between, actually.
No, because we don't get to the fact that there are, like, alternate timelines that we've missed. And also, they don't seem to, like, acknowledge alternate timelines in this movie. They just kind of, like, that's what it would have been, but it's not now.
The plot is literally centered around alternate timelines, but continue.
Well, I did not get an alternate timeline vibe from it. I got that, yes, things were different before, but now they're changed. Not that there were, like, paradoxes and split timelines.
Well, I think that the timeline concept is just subsumed by alternate dimensions.
It's like, I don't think they ever indicated that there were alternate dimensions. They just basically, like, when the time travel happens, the time changes.
Well, anyway.
They just weren't sophisticated in their time travel adaptations.
No.
In any way.
No.
They didn't try to be.
No.
I think you inserted alternate timelines to make it at least some semblance of standard time travel story.
Yes. With the dimension aspect. Because there is plane hopping to some degree.
Yeah. Through black holes.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be the story of Kirk. Let's just call it that. It's going to be the story of Kirk and Spock.
Diet
but
Kirk.
Like a bad story of Kirk and Spock.
Yes.
And it all goes bad because Kirk's daddy dies right at the beginning.
Hemsworth, yes.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, that was the little Hemsworth. Yeah.
Okay. All right. He dies. Like, right off the bat, the seconds after he's born, he's alive long enough to say, let's call him Jim. And then he
gets blown up.
He rams his ship into the other ship.
To try to save the universe.
Or the 800 people in the escape pods.
The escape pods. He's trying to save the escape potties.
He's trying to save the... Okay. So then you flash forward to Kirk is now a delinquent 12-year-old joyriding with cars that don't make sense physically. He looks like what fuse box do you put in a classic car to have it running whatever the heck it was that he had on that dashboard?
It's just the body. It's just the frame.
And but the wheel, they have...
I know. It's so stupid. Dumb.
And it was just like, you know what would be... do you know how we show how rad this rebel is? We give him a hot rod and have him joyride and let's Thelma and Louise it, but he's going to leap out at the last minute.
This dork could not have reached the pedals. First of all, I call BS. Second of all, he looks like Zachary Cody from The Suite Life of Zachary Cody.
I mean.
On the Disney Channel.
So dumb. So dumb.
They do play some Beastie Boys, though.
Anyway, that's about the end of that. He's a delinquent child. Then they flash forward again, and now he's a delinquent, shiftless adult.
But he's a super genius.
And, like, the military knows that he'd really be the best ever if he would just agree to do it because his dad was a hero for the 12 minutes he had command of a ship.
He's got it in him.
He was just born captain-y, it seems.
Yeah.
Which, sure.
The Uber captain.
I'll tell you, there are people in this world that believe that's a real thing, and it's part of why we live in a screwed up society. We look at that and like, that's ridiculous on the face, but...
I was born with stripes on my sleeve.
When I was born, the doctor saluted.
Poor.
Anyway,
pain.
He gets in a stupid bar fight because he's...
And he gropes Natoya Uhura.
Uh-huh.
During the bar fight. It's an accident, but he does
get
one
but
in.
And it's like such a Cheez-It, like...
It's so juvenile.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like...
And it's juvenile in a way that Star Trek never was that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This was made for people who wished Star Trek was a different show.
Continue.
Yeah.
I got notes.
Yeah, I know. I watched you sit there and have to take journal breaks in this movie. Anyway, he gets in a bar fight. It's stupid. He's hitting on Uhura. And then daddy's best friend or something that is like now Federation...
Admiral
man.
Pike.
Oh, it is Admiral Pike. That's right. It's Pike. That one is Pike right there at the beginning. And so Pike is like, Kirk, you gotta come. Captain,
you can do school fast because of your genius thing and be a captain for sure in like 8 years.
He's like, I can do it in 3. And then he gets on the, like, shows up to the transport ship and gives away his motorcycle like a badass.
It's like, I don't need and this then, anymore. Like, I'm going to space, San Francisco.
And then immediately insults everyone on the, like, transport ship with him, which I've heard is exactly how you make it far in the military.
We saw this in Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Only this one wasn't enough to see it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then Bones is there, and he's like, gotta give me a nickname because of my wife took everything but my bones, so I'm leaving the planet by going to San Francisco. Because that's where the Academy is. They ride a spaceship to San Francisco.
They ride... I didn't catch that. And...
They ride a spaceship to San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to repeat it in that tone. I am with you. We are here.
But like... The Dr. Sawbones connection is too obvious and on the nose. We gotta just make him a divorced asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, he does the school so good that he passes the test that nobody can pass. In the meantime, we see Spock's childhood where he's being bullied for being a... half human child, and it's really funny to me because it was like they're bullying him because of all the emotions that he has, but like, you don't have dispassionate bullying. That's not like, you have an agitation that has worked you up to the point of trying to push a child over the edge. You are not a dispassionate being. Bull crap. Not a Vulcan thing. Shut up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like the Vulcans now, can be jerks.
The backhanded comment that they kept saying, like, wow, despite all your setbacks, you've done very well.
They also, okay. These little kids also called him his mom a whore.
Yeah.
Just like, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know that that would be an insult for Vulcans. They're so logical that, like,
maybe they would understand that someone's worth isn't tied to the number of sexual partners they may or may not have had.
Yes. Like, yeah. Like, oh, cool.
Yeah. But they just wanted Spock to be bullied because I don't even know how that should fit in his backstory. Being discriminated against in those little backhanded ways for being half human makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Having disagreements with your parents.
Having a fist fight in your school bowl.
Yes. Yes.
That is the dumbest thing.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway. So he's had it rough growing up and has finally decided that, like, no, I don't want to join the Vulcan Academy, actually, even though of course you want me because I'm the smartest ever, even though I'm half human. Thanks for mentioning it. And I'm going to go join the Federation.
Yeah.
And so he does, and it turns out the test that nobody can pass is devised by Spock, and Kirk passes it by
hacking
cheating
the code.
Yeah.
Yeah. He reprograms the simulation.
Yeah. Which, again, like,
so, okay. On the note of the Kobayashi Maru.
Mm-hmm.
In the original timeline media stuff, Kirk did pass the Kobayashi Maru by hacking it, but in no way was there any kind of portrayal of it going down like this.
Uh-huh.
It seemed more of like a fun exercise than a I'm better than everyone else here kind of a thing. In the way it was framed in like one of the movies when they're in their 60s. Like, you know, like...
Like it was... I don't know. It wasn't whatever
and
this
also
was.
He...
Like they basically were like gonna bring him up on disciplinary action and he was maybe going to get expelled and they have to fake an illness to get him onto the ship.
Because there's an emergency at the planet Vulcan.
And I'm a doctor, so I can bring whoever I want on a ship because of directives that sound completely made up.
Yeah.
And then they go up there and they get on the Enterprise and it's like the maiden voyage of the Enterprise and we haven't even gotten to christen it. And then they don't even know how to, like, undock because they've sent a bunch of students that apparently haven't graduated to go rescue the whole of Vulcan. Because they're all very special boys and girls.
Pain.
And they get out there and there's a lightning storm and Kirk's the only one who remembers that lightning storms are what the thing was that killed Daddy Kirk.
And he has to run across the entire ship to convey this information.
Yeah. Because communicators aren't a thing.
They
and
didn't want them. They
anyway, he's
hokey.
The very, very smartest boy and nobody else remembers this very, like, clear thing that happened at the beginning of the movie.
Despite Pike referencing the events multiple times and it having been a big matter of historical and Federation and military importance.
Yeah.
Since forever.
Yeah. But Kirk recognizes it for the same thing that it was, and that Vulcan is under attack and that this is an ambush, and he manages to, I don't know, just be aware that they were in an ambush when they went ahead and warped out into the ambush anyway.
Yeah. Like, but he was right.
He was right, but didn't Anyway, the ambush is a Romulan space fleet that is
from the future.
Because in the future, Spock messes things up and their planet gets eaten by a supernova.
Their sun exploded.
Yeah.
They said it weird, but their sun exploded.
Well, it went supernova. They didn't specify.
They called it a star the entire time, which is technically accurate, but does not convey, like...
And they said it destroyed the whole galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, like, do they mean solar system? Where they're like, it's a spinny thing in space. Yeah. Close enough.
Like tons of stars go supernova all the time, thousands and thousands of years ago, that we see happen today. No big deal. Whatever. But if the sun did that...
Yeah.
We'd be upset.
Yeah.
And just the way they talk about it in the movie is just like, I understand what you mean, but that's not what you're saying.
No, they did they really didn't care very much about the science of any of this, which is also not characteristic of Star Trek largely.
Anyway,
Spock sets off a black hole to prevent the supernova from being a supernova more, because it was going to destroy an entire galaxy.
And
because
setting a black hole in the middle of your solar system isn't a bad idea either.
Yeah. And so he sets up this black hole and they immediately get sucked into the past, because Star Trek's big on just straight up magic.
Well, like, black holes and worm tunnels are the same. Like, usually it's like a worm tunnel thing, or like they went at super, super, super warp speed. Like, usually it's not running into the gravity pit.
Right. And it's possible that they've talked about, like, around a black hole.
Yeah, like using it to slingshot to gain speed.
Space-time bends. And there's some of these, like, theoretical physics of space-time.
But running directly into it.
That is going to collapse you into basically a singularity.
Yes. It's like, that, you're the atom now.
Yeah.
Like the science in Star Trek is made up, but they do have in-universe fantasy magic rules for it. This isn't even that.
Well, and it's usually based off of
existing principles.
Theoretical physics that are really,
like,
you know,
that's the sci-fi.
Out there. Yeah.
That's the sci-fi.
Following some, like, they have not just straight up been like, well, if we wish hard enough, we won't get pulverized.
Like back in the day, they used to get fan letters from people like, hey, if you're going into warp speed, wouldn't the gravity of that just turn the entire crew on the object going warp speed into just like a red mist? How do you account for that? And in future episodes, they'd be like, and you turned on the anti-red mist device, right? this isn't real stuff, but it's science fiction.
They have a particular brand of science fiction that has always been really well married to science fact.
Yes.
And as a way of celebrating science fact. And when they are skirting around physical realities, they're doing it while acknowledging, like, this is just some really special technology that got away from that physical reality.
This was a really weird scenario that doesn't happen until the aliens do the magic, but it was science stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's just beyond our comprehension right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So this one just threw a lot of space words at the script.
Yes.
Like supernova.
Anyway, so now this Romulan last of its kind.
So angry.
But wouldn't have been the last of its kind. Like, its planet would be still existing when it came back through. Has decided that it's Spock's fault that the supernova happened.
And the Federation. And to protect the planet from the future of the sun imploding, he needs to destroy the Federation.
and planet Vulcan, specifically with Spock watching.
And that's not so much to save Romulus as just to make Spock feel bad.
Yeah. That was just revenge.
But his solution to saving his people isn't to, like, give them extra warning.
Yeah. It's, I went back in time, and now I can stop the thing from happening. It's no. And that's something that bothers me about a lot of movies, is that they create a villain. There are real villains in this world. And real villains have logic.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Within a very distorted framework. They have a distorted base level of ideas, and then it snowballs into evil.
So I actually have an interpretation of the movie as depicted that is not in line with, like, the canon and the lore and stuff, but just, like, based on the viewing, this is the thing that is most reasonable.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that once we finish the plot.
Anyway, they destroy Vulcan. They're going to go destroy Earth. They're trying to save these people. Spock and Kirk are fighting. I'm just going to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
They go and they save Earth from this evil Romulan, and they do it by throwing another black hole seed at him, and then it kind of ends with them, like...
Kirk is captain now.
Captain, yeah.
Of the entire crew of the non-graduates. Because they graduated in the battlefield.
And then future old man Spock, who it was delightful to see Leonard Nimoy.
I love that
I'm going
man.
To throw that down.
Yeah.
He's
not responsible.
He comes and meets young present time Spock, and these dirty bastards decided to have him not say his line because they make a joke about how his line's cliched. Like, thank you, no. They should not have done that. And he introduces himself to himself and kind of makes fun of the idea that that would be a paradox, because they didn't put, like, this is just, it is all one timeline, and this is what it is now. They did not address timeline paradox at all, or alternate timelines. It was nothing. It was a big, giant, you should hire somebody else to write time travel stories in the future. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I am not a big Star Trek fan. I have respect for it. I've seen quite a bit of it. I don't have a lot of, like, really passionate concern for it. And I was offended on its behalf watching this movie.
Yeah. So, I'll go through my notes as I flip the page. just the highlights.
Buckle up, folks.
So, Star Trek, parentheses, 2009, end parentheses, BS. My bullets.
Hitting hard right from the start.
Skipping the christening of the Enterprise on its maiden voyage. A film tradition! Like, just, like, spitting on, like, 10 films. Not only is it bad, like, voyaging on a boat ship principle, like, bad luck. It's also just, like, yeah, screw that. We don't have time for that. Okay.
Well, they didn't even have to mention a christening.
It could have just been an Enterprise that wasn't brand new.
Yeah.
The reason it was a brand new Enterprise in every one of those movies is because the old one got destroyed in the previous movie.
Yeah.
It could have just been an active ship. Like...
Or most people probably wouldn't have concerned themselves, but what about the christening?
Yeah. But no, it's just like, whatever. Uhura intercepts a transmission of Romulans destroying a bunch of Klingon ships, and that kind of info doesn't make it into a report to the top brass? That's major news for the Federation and Pike that they should have been aware of going into the emergency trip to Vulcan. Spock telling Sulu how to fly the ship. Bad. Special Boy Kirk is a genius and needs to follow his destiny. He's the only one who can connect all the dots. Flaunting the rules and regulations for personal gain and glory. McCoy getting Kirk onto the ship being a prime example. Like, that is so antithetical to the entire multi-series. It's so...
No.
No!
Mm-hmm.
Leering and womanizing, natural talent, and no need to study Kirk. Like, they were like, we're gonna do Star Trek, but different. We're gonna change it so we don't have to stick to the canon and do our own thing.
But well, and that was one of the things with Kirk, is like, womanizing.
He has the reputation, but if you actually look at the footage, a lot of that is him being influenced and like in non-consensual scenarios.
Well, still, part of that is due to like how TV portrayed womanizing.
Yeah.
In the old times.
That too.
So womanizing, fine. Okay.
Except, like, explicitly, there's more than one instance, like, multiple episodes where, like, one of the big things has been Kirk. Like, this was such a huge progressive feminist show and continues to try to do that. Like, as an officer, stood up for female members of his crew who claimed other officers, sometimes the captain...
womanizing doesn't have to be rapey.
I know, but like this,
like he likes the ladies. He comes off as liking the ladies.
But
he
like
does.
This is all just like so gross. Like
anyway,
no,
it was portrayed poorly.
Yeah.
But furthermore, okay, so the womanizing, that's fine. They took it to assaulty, which is not great.
Yes.
The like doesn't follow the rules. I can buy that. Roguish.
So, but like, that was for the benefit of entire populations?
I still haven't gotten to my point.
Okay.
But I never saw Kirk portrayed as a super genius.
No! He wasn't! He put in the time and was a leader who, like, consulted other people for their expertise and opinions.
But it was usually his superpower was boldness.
Yeah.
That was what his superpower was that he was just so very bold. He would do things that were unexpected because he had the audacity to try.
Yeah.
He wasn't a super genius.
No.
He had just very strong leadership skills.
Yeah.
That respected those around. He always respected those around him.
And when other people said, you're out of line, they'd act accordingly. Like, in particular, McCoy. If he saw something hinky, he'd be like, no.
And they wouldn't get in trouble for breaking the line of command because he knew he was pushing boundaries and he counted on his crew to stand up to be the conscience that he needed to have when he wasn't using it properly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, this, but super genius was never.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, and the other thing, too, is womanizing, loving the women, but not with the conflict of interest. He never pursued crew members or people ranked below him. It was either someone who just wasn't part of the Federation or Starfleet, just an academic.
Yeah.
Or someone who was literally from another planet.
Yeah.
Like, there was never any hierarchy issues in that, which are throughout this movie. I mean, like, gosh.
Yeah.
Spock and Uhura.
Yeah, he's a teacher, it seems, somehow.
He's a teacher and ranked above her.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Man.
But yeah, they just made... This is a really hard movie to talk about because they got every turn wrong like that.
Yeah. So
on a TV show that repeatedly made every turn right.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what stood out with them.
Yeah. And like the movies, while trying to be for broader audiences, also continued to try to tackle, if not social issues, like philosophical and moral questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like they were still trying to say something in their blockbusters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, half the time when people say things like, what we're looking for is fully automated luxury gay space communism, they're like, we want our life to be Star Trek.
Yeah. So my next point, the Romulan ship is just a slow Death Star. Spock equals Princess Leia. Wait. In viewing his planet getting destroyed by the slow Death Star.
While on someplace that looks suspiciously like the ice planet of Hoth.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Pike promotes Kirk to first officer and Spock to captain, despite them clearly being at odds in personal conflict and in an almost guaranteed death scenario for the entire crew. The lens flares really do suck ass.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it looked like mistakes, but then I think it was trying to show that there were like those cool glass computer screens all over the bridge.
And when audiences called J.J. Abrams on it, he pulled out of his butt, the lens flare are a visual metaphor for how bright their futures are. And then in the follow-up grim dark sequel for Star Trek, no lens flares, just misery. He just makes stuff
when
up.
When the lens flares stop, the darkness.
He just lied. Oh, he just tried to make it a creative choice with like more than I just thought it looked cool. Whatever.
I like watching a train wreck of a movie like this. This is, I don't know anything about J.J. Abrams.
I do.
But he seems like the type of guy who does believe that some people were just born very captain.
He's a lot of the discussion and attitude I've seen towards J.J. Abrams falls squarely under auteur theory. Like,
yeah, but I'm saying who nepotismed this person into this position to begin with?
Oh, I'd have to look.
Because I don't see how what I saw there was merit.
So, continuing on.
Anyway.
Next point. Collapsible space swords. Shring! No more comment. Gotta have a dead mom or you don't have any motivation.
Always kill your mother. If you're making a show, always kill your mother.
Yeah.
Any sort of art, it just will never hit home the way it could if you didn't kill your mother.
Yeah, so many dead / missing women to motivate guys. Dead Spock's mom, not named in the film. In fact, the Wikipedia article switches back and forth between calling her Amanda, her actual name, and Winona, the first name of Winona Ryder.
And also, they put her in what appeared to be a bucket.
Yeah, they made some weird choices with the Vulcan wardrobe. Dead Nero's wife, the bad guy. Absent, who knows, Kirk's mom. She survives the initial inciting incident.
Well, and he's got a stepdad.
But, like,
no, but then, yeah. Like, he interacts with his stepdad, but not his mother moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nero wants to destroy the Federation because it stood by when his planet died, was destroyed. But in the timeline he's arrived in, like, in neither version was Romulus part of the Federation. They were just in a bad spot, and the Federation was like, yeah, we've always fought you, but we don't want you dead. Like, we'll do what we can. And just didn't do it in time. But whatever, dude, you go off. But also, why wait 25 years to get started if Nero's plan is so important? There's a 25-year gap. Straight up jettison Kirk off the ship for insubordination while first officer, instead of putting him in the brig so they can introduce an exiled Scotty. Copy the earworm of truthfulness from Wrath of Khan. Old Spock hanging out in a cave. He killed spider monster thing with a fire stick / torch. Star-going supernova was threatening to destroy the galaxy, but Spock flew too slow to save Romulus. They did black holes bad.
So bad.
Old Spock knows there's a Starfleet outpost near the cave, but hasn't gone there to inform Starfleet of what the hell is going on, unless he learned it from the mind meld with Kirk. Little beady-eyed guy that speaks in high-pitched gibberish is oddly reminiscent of the hooded little guys from the desert planet in Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
That was not a star, like an existing alien Star species. Trek race, they made it fresh for this one. No signal from ship or jettison pod to Federation outpost letting Scotty know Kirk needed pickup, or Scotty just isn't reading his email. They left him to die, like, on a danger planet. Doing the thing from Voyage or Journey Home, I don't remember the name of the movie, by giving the engineer the thing they'd invented before they'd invented it, making a loop of invention, specifically Scotty's super transportation formula, like transportating a person onto
while
a
warp
moving
speed.
Op- yeah. Mommy issues fight from Spock.
There was really too much bad in this movie.
So, but like fighting over the mommy issues and none of these other people on the bridge tried to keep the captain from killing a man. They just sort of stand back like, whoa, crazy. The jettisoned first officer gets back on the ship and emotionally compromises the captain, who steps down. So now first officer idiot is captain, but also Pike only told 4 people who first officer was in the first place, and Spock didn't share with the class because it was a surprise to everybody. Nobody clears Spock for duty after he returns from talking to his dad. I was so angry. Also, even once back on the command deck, Kirk is still acting as captain. Are all of the Romulans on the ship cult members? All bald with facial tattoos, not a species thing, and seems unlikely to be a job requirement for the mining ship. Nero's wife, who's pictured, the only female Romulan you can tell, like, appearing on screen at all, has hair. So, like, also, one of these Romulans on the ship is like, your species is a bit weaker than I thought, to Kirk. Which, okay, they're not part of the Federation. Like, they're not in any kind of cordial relationship with Earth or human people or whatever. But it doesn't seem unlikely, just from what's on screen, that this crazy guy who's just like, I'm gonna blow up planets and not do the thing that matches my motivation. And also, all of us have matching face tattoos and have shaved our heads. It seems like maybe they're Romulan separatist skinheads. Like, and they gave them that design to make them look extra scary and intimidating.
Of course.
But it's like, okay, the effect is you have a subculture with extremist values.
Yeah.
You ran into Romulan Nazis.
Yeah.
Like, that's, anyway. And then Kirk's promoted to captain and just, anyway. But, so, it doesn't try to continue at all the vein of, like, social progress and feminist messaging and things.
No.
It doesn't care about, even ignoring that aspect, the film tradition.
Yeah.
It isn't trying to make sense in terms of plot or science mm-hmm. or chain of command.
Yeah.
And
I thought too, like, even with Star Trek was also really progressive on depicting non-white people as holding professional roles and doing things that were important. They really didn't, if they weren't already a named character, they were casting a white guy.
Yeah.
Your red shirts were white guys.
Uh-huh.
The people
or
at
an
the,
alien.
The people at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly white guys.
Well, yes. So, also, these movies have a race problem.
Yeah, which Star Trek, by today's standards, had a race problem.
Yeah.
But it was
progressive
one,
for
one
the
that,
time.
Well, and one that I think they noted would have done more for had it not been for the fact that they would have never been allowed to air.
Yeah.
You know.
They did everything they could under the 60s circumstances, mm-hmm. including, anyway.
So yeah, this movie didn't follow in that tradition, you know.
And my point with the follow-up, Star Trek Into Darkness, specific to Benedict Cumberbatch, is this. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Khan. Khan Noonien Singh.
Oh, God.
An Indian man. And they do their retconning and, like, change. Like, here's the reason he looks white, you guys. Cool. But the whole conceit of the character is that in the future of the 60s, like, looking forward prospectively into the 1990s, there was a eugenics war. And a bunch of people of different nationalities and ethnicities, including and particularly Khan Noonien Singh, had been genetically, like, eugenicsed into existence and were more physically and mentally acute than your average human. And in fact, Khan Singh ruled a quarter of Earth before getting kicked out. Like, eugenics bad. Also, the races are equal, y'all, is the messaging behind that.
Yeah.
And they gave it to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
bad choices.
Yes.
They just, it feels like when they are given a choice to make, they make a poor one.
And so, one of, okay. I've got anger. I'm still shaking.
This was supposed to be kind of a little bit more low-key fun.
I've been ready
watch
to go off on this for ages.
I know.
Well,
I mean, I found out you keep these things to yourself sometimes.
Well, you and I don't usually talk about Star Trek. And we've had our discussions about Star Wars that haven't needed to branch into this. So. I'm preparing myself. What do I want to shred first? Okay. A lot of this stuff, like the big highlights, like live long and prosper and I'm divorced and the things and whatever, are like going through the Wikipedia page highlights of things that people know about Star Trek. And it's like, gotta put that in the movie. Not appreciating like why that would matter to anybody. Or the context around that, right? So it's just like, I'm divorced, call me Bones! I've got a daddy I disagree with, I'm Spock! Kind of stuff. Or, for example, if you're one of the producers or writers for the movie, watching the series for the first time and taking notes. Right? Like, the surface level big stuff. But also, J.J. Abrams really, really wanted to do this movie. He started as a producer and later also got to be director. Really, really, really wanted to do this movie. Right? Wasn't, like, a fan of Star Trek. Like, knew who Kirk and Spock were. Like, knew the pop culture stuff around it. Was like, yeah, I don't care about those guys. Like, said in some interviews, like, as the filming went on, I did grow to love the characters. And, like,
but his characters were horrible.
Yes. And I think he just said that. I don't know where that aligns in real time to when he said on the Stephen Colbert show that he was a Star Wars fan and didn't really like Star Trek.
Then why would you...
So you could have...
Why would you get into somebody else...
So you...
This seems like yucking someone's yum.
Yeah. And my theory is, not unlike George Lucas, who re-edited the original Star... I've been watching YouTube even since we recorded that episode, man. It just keeps coming up. Who re-edited the original cut of the film, supposedly to fully realize the vision he'd had, but in other accounts to practice the special effects he wanted to use in another film he was making.
Well, I mean, he kind of had a special effects company, so
yeah. But like,
it was kind of a brand thing.
But like, claiming one thing to the public, but like, actually, it's just like Play-Doh. Like, I'm just...
Yeah, it always seemed like an advertisement for his special effects company.
Yeah. It's not for the art.
Right.
It's for the industry.
Yeah.
Because
he didn't even make Jabba the Hutt the right size.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, I'm going to practice and I'm going to keep the new version and delete the old... Whatever. I don't care. I don't... You know. J.J. Abrams really loves Star Wars. In fact, he went on to direct future Star Wars films... With this bolstering his credentials for it, because he did such a good job making the Star Trek movie look more like Star Wars. Like, even to the point of that little ship that,
yeah,
that old Spock flies around.
Yep.
Isn't in keeping with, like, Star Trek design sensibilities.
Yeah, no, it looks like an Imperial...
From the shuttle. Outside and the interior with the seating mm-hmm. arrangement and stuff looks
like an Imperial shuttle.
Yeah.
From Star Wars.
Or a little bit like the Millennium Falcon angled cockpit. Like, mm-hmm. that's not a Star Trek sensibility. That's a Star Wars sensibility. Like, a lot of it is just, okay, I'll do the script, but not caring about the messaging or the art.
Yeah. No, it does. It does really seem like it was something specifically directed at yucking someone's yum.
Yeah.
It was not. This is a stay in your lane moment.
Yeah.
That, like.
And in fact, it's.
There's a lot of lanes.
It can be compared to the third one in this reboot series, which Simon Pegg ended up doing a bunch of the script and stuff on. Under a huge time crunch, because Simon Pegg does love Star Trek
uh-huh.
and played Scotty, right? And a bunch of people, after the second one came out, were like, buddy, why are you doing this? You're part of the bad thing. I thought you loved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, through a variety of circumstances and over time, different director got put in charge of it. They threw out the script they'd had and wrote one in like 6 months, and it was a better Star Trek movie. Still not on par, but like working like with what they had set up from the previous two. It was a better Star Trek movie. It's not going to stand out in anyone's mind, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's someone who was trying to course correct and did what they could. And like, if I were to make a Star Trek movie today, I would make changes to improve things or fill in gaps or things, but
modernize to today's sensibilities.
It wouldn't
a
be
little. Yeah.
Because I hate the original. Like, I take issue with stuff in the originals.
Yeah, it really does not actually hold up to today.
No.
Other than the fact that it was
a stepping stone.
Fighting these battles and a very early fighter of these battles.
Yeah, it did a lot then to get us to where we are now.
Yeah.
Like, you can love something and take issue with it, and in these creative areas, do it different and better out of respect and like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so, it just sucks. It's bad art.
Yeah.
It sucks so bad. It's disrespectful.
And it is.
To so many people.
It is.
Like, this is so many legacies. Like, Star Trek has inspired so many people to go into the actual sciences and make breakthroughs. Like, it was part of the inspiration behind cell phones, among other things. And the cell phones were too dorky to include in this movie. But we could have the collapsible metal swords. Like, it just...
No, it is.
It drains the heart out of it.
It does. It was one of the... most superficial,
mm-hmm.
dumb movies I've seen in a while.
And it wasn't trying to do anything new with it. Like, it reused, like, it's okay to do, like, you know, Live Long and Prosper. That's always going to be a hit, right? Wrath of Khan is going to stand out in cinema. Like, it just is. Making references to those things isn't like bad in any way, but that's all of the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Destroying a planet. Had a movie about that. Wrath of Khan. Had Wrath of Khan. We've already seen Spock's death scene. You just did it with a different actor. And the relationship was worse between the characters being portrayed. So it didn't actually have the impact you were trying to replicate. Like, you just did it all bad.
They did. Do you have an Ubrick rating for this?
Jar Jar Abrams can go to hell.
Okay.
I'm personally mad at him for being a bad artist.
Yeah.
What about you, Amy?
it's so dumb. I laughed straight through the movie.
Yeah.
I was just like, this isn't even worth
it. It's not good.
Yeah. So bad.
It changed the landscape of our culture. It changed the landscape of our technology. It changed the like, it contributed so much to society today, and they were like, dumb, whatever, and just made a start.
Respect nerds, y'all.
It's like, it's not even about like that. Like,
yeah, it is. There's a whole, like, nerd culture, like, owes a lot to Star Trek.
But I'm saying society owes a lot to Star Trek.
They do. They do. But like, that movie should have been made more for the nerds.
Yeah.
It really should have. It would have been more true.
Yeah.
I do want to remind everybody that we are professionals.
Don't watch these at home.